Welcome to Culinary Convo. I am your host, Devin Ream. The coffee is poured and your spot at the table is open. I've got my mise en place, and if your mind is open, let us begin. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Top Chef Rundown. It's Dino Wars. I will explain that in a minute. And then going over the one-of-a-kinds in Hawaii, got friend of the pod, friend in life, always coming on and making everything lively, Mr. Joel, who has been to Hawaii.
Yeah, I have once.
Oh, my God.
It's yeah. Joel Burkhart, it's the greatest man alive.
Yeah, I've been to Hawaii once. It was really amazing.
I think
like
it's
I
really
said, I'm never going to go back there again because I got to respect. But I went on my grandmother's dime, so I don't control where the vacations happen.
Right. Well, and see,
but it was totally worth it. It was a beautiful country.
Yeah, and see, I think I'm the only one in my family that hasn't been to Hawaii. Like, I think my parents have been to Hawaii when they were, like, young. Right, and then my brother and his family, they went to Hawaii not too long ago. And I'm like, I'm in Oregon. There's a lot of Hawaiian stuff around. And Seattle, when I lived there, right? So it's like,
why bother?
Why haven't I been to Hawaii? Like, why is nobody taking me to Hawaii? Like,
you got to take yourself to Hawaii.
I think you're a big girl now. Yeah,
you're
a big girl now. Yeah, I'm a big girl now. I got to put on my big girl panties and go to Hawaii by myself. And
on your own dime, probably, too, which is really unfortunate.
It is. Yeah, I'm going to step off the plane and just be like, aloha, do you have my little neck? Oh, there it is.
You don't get those. That was only in Fifth Element, so and that wasn't Hawaii. That was a totally different planet. But you go on your own dime, and it's gonna be so expensive that you can just hop right back on the plane and say, okay, take me out.
I may have been scammed then, because I thought I signed up for like a bus tour where that was possible, where you got your little lay before you even got off the plane. So there is $130 gone. I wondered why it was so expensive.
Yeah, the lay itself is actually $130. Yeah, I don't know what you're paying for.
Right, right. They're like, it's made of orchids. Of course it's this expensive. And I'm just like, no duh. Best experience ever. Bye. And then it's just a scam.
I could see that being a thing.
Yeah, I could. Yeah. I mean, you got to get those folks that are just like, Facebook is a scam. I think my email is always being hacked, yet they Google something and are immediately like, this is going to get me a good experience. And so they hit purchase. And then all of a sudden they have a PayPal account they never knew about. You know,
that happened to me.
Yeah. See,
I mean, it didn't, but wouldn't it be more dramatic if it did?
It did. Yeah, exactly. You had a story. You're like, when I was in Hawaii, there was this PayPal account.
It came up to me and it said, what are you doing here?
Yeah. Yeah.
You shouldn't be able to afford to be here. It was
any money. You're like, I don't. Why? What's going on?
Why do you exist?
Why do you exist? But Dino Wars for Top Chef.
I'm intrigued already.
Yeah, Top Chef Houston, episode 7. Once again, Brittany Brito Garley, you know, round of applause, okay? Round of applause. She's been writing these great articles of the recaps of the episodes. They're amazing.
Thank God
says
for her.
Exactly. Yeah, because I take notes every now and again, and I take photos. They're never as, like, good as they think they should be, you know? Like, even when I type the notes, I'm like, what was I typing?
You're
like,
a very good writer, Devin, but you're not actively being paid for it. And that's what Brittany's there for.
That's what she's there for, is the paid operation of,
Yeah.
But the remaining 7 Top Chef contestants tap
it's
into
only
the
seven
cities.
Now? Yeah, how long have I been gone?
Only 2 episodes. Episode 5 and 6.
Goodness.
That was it.
How the time flies and how all those undeserving people went home, whoever they were.
Yeah, those people. Yep.
Yeah, all the really good chef people, the ones who make the food. Yeah.
Those people.
Yeah, they like
the chefy ones.
They like heat up things and they cool mm-hmm. things down
with
and
fire on a plate. Times.
Oh, right. Oh, fire. That's pyrokinetics.
That is. Yeah. Very astute of you. To
I know
point
how cooking works.
At. Yeah. Yeah. You understand the science of all
if
this.
If you're a fan of the pod, you'll know right. that I'm speaking out of my rear end right now.
Yeah. Just a little. A little.
Yeah, a little.
Yeah, but no, the Top Chef contestants, they're going to tap into the city's Nigerian cuisine and serve up dinosaur-themed eats.
That's right. Fun. I love that.
And they're doing it inside of a museum with, like, huge dinosaur bones around them, right? Like, they've got full skeletal, like, you know, what do they call it? Fossils of dinosaurs all around them. And they're eating in this, like, lit up table. Like, it looks futuristic, Jurassic, whatever. And it is for basically a plug for the Jurassic World Dominion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. There's even, like, a little guest thing where it's a video of, I'm trying to remember, it's, what's his name's daughter? Who played Opie on Andy Griffith? Ron Howard.
Oh, yeah.
His daughter. Okay. And Pat? Did I say Pratt? Chris Pratt, not
Ew,
Pat.
Chris.
Yeah,
Pratt.
And Chris. And they do this video thing where they're like, "Cook up this." I didn't even pay attention. I was just.
Oh
like,
yeah, no. I would have turned. My brain would have been like, "You can't see that." Like I was it's like, just a blank green screen.
Right. I was just like, "Okay, cool." Like they're here to talk about the movie.
Good
but
to
they
know
didn't.
That Top Chef is cashing in on their paid promotions.
Totally. Yeah. They're like, we're going to do it in a museum. And immediately every advertiser person for Jurassic World Dominion was like, this is our perfect opportunity.
Yeah. They swooped in like the hawks that they are.
Yeah. Because the crossover of people who are foodies and people who love Jurassic Park, they cross. It's identical, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's like the same target audience. There's not even like the Venn diagram. There's no difference. It's just
there's no difference. It's the same. Yeah. It's the same
it's the
circle.
The exact same thing.
You could
people
try to make
enjoy
the point.
Eating and people who like Jurassic World.
Yeah. You could try to make the point of like, you know, kids like dinosaurs, but I don't know if they like cooking. It's like, well, Jurassic World Dominion is not a child's movie.
No, that's an adult movie. It's rated PG-13.
Right. And we're like,
or something.
We're like, okay, that's fine. But what about like adults who like dinosaurs? It's like, well, that's like the scientific community and some of the, because they love cooking.
Yeah. That's what the museum's for.
Right.
That's why they have the backdrop of the museum. And they're like, no, that's for the adults. They like all these old bones and things. Blah, blah, blah. By the way, Chris Pratt's on the screen. That's exactly what they were thinking.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking as I saw it. Was oh,
as
my
you're
God.
Watching, you're like, oh, my goodness. Yeah. It's that one really religious guy now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it does say, despite incorporating a daring dinosaur theme with the Houston Museum of Natural Science as the setting, the challenge feels a little less Houston in that it can be held relatively in any city with an impressive dinosaur exhibit.
That's kind of what I was thinking, too. I was like, what museum is this in? Not that I've, like, been to Houston. I assume they have a museum. But, like,
totally.
Still, I'm just like, that's not going to be, like, very Texan fleek. I guess you would say.
Yeah. And that's the thing is like when you try to think of basically like dinosaur bones, fossils, whatever in the U.S., I think a lot of folks think of like Colorado or like Utah, like desert-esque type,
Nevada.
So it's right. I'm not thinking Texas. Texas, I'm thinking cowboys. And so, spoilers ahead, Top Chef Houston, Episode 7, The Challenges. You got the quickfire. It says Ope Amasu, the chef behind Post Houston's West African fast casual restaurant, Chopin Block, and Kwame Onwuachi, a Top Chef California alum, right? So, once again, the alums coming back.
Yeah.
Lead the chef testants through a challenge in which they attempt a Nigerian dish to accompany swallow, an African starch that is boiled, cooked, and used to dip into stews. So similar to fufu or ugali. Chefs draw knives to choose their version of swallow, amala, eba, or ia. And after getting a hands-on tasting from Omasu and Onwachi, the heat is on to make the best dish. I'll be the first to admit, while watching this, they're talking amongst each other, like with Padma, with it, and they're all talking about all these foods. And the only thing I could think of in my mind was, this is a conversation that these people can have, and they all know what they're talking about, and they're all having a great time talking about it. But if an outside observer who knows, like if you,
like me,
if you were to step in there,
the show,
you would feel like they are making stuff up. They're just
like, they're just making sounds.
right. This is a word salad, and five of these are croutons. Like, there's no way.
Exactly. I'm already thrown off by swallow. I'm like, that's a verb.
Right. It's kind of like, man, oh man. And so it's one of those things where, like, if you're watching it, you know, and you know a lot about food, I think there is like a moment where you kind of have to step back, and it's like, it's so cool that they're doing Nigerian dishes and that they're doing this food. But obviously, as Americans, like, man, we hardly know nothing about Nigerian food.
You just use a double negative. We don't even know how to make sentences.
Exactly. Like, we don't even know our own language, let alone, like,
English is hard. You want me to talk about all this stuff?
Yeah. And so it's like, it's super cool that they're doing it, and I love it. But at the same time, there's like a part of me that's like, is this kind of like a privileged discussion? Like, you guys know about
for
this food?
Sure. For like, sure. That was privileged discussion. But yeah. I think they probably didn't edit it out to set the tone of like, no, these are like respected
experts
in their field.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So,
which is true. Like, I mean, they are
absolutely
that good. Yeah. And it's
just, don't shove it in my face, please. Because I get confused easily.
I get confused.
I don't know where I'm going at the time.
Yeah. And maybe that does say a lot about us and where we are. Like, in America right now, that we're basically
true.
Like, where we're like, Nigerian food? What do I live in New York or LA? Like, you know, like, maybe Nigerian food should be everywhere. And
I think it should. Yeah.
Probably.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
I want to try. I don't even know what's in it. We haven't even done an episode on Nigeria, and I want to know. I want to eat it. I want to try it right now.
Right. I just know French colonialism. That's what I know about Nigeria. I know that.
Empires. I know that's a thing.
Yeah, yeah. But no, basically Luke Culpin, so Luke, Mr. Noma, right, he expresses worry at the beginning of the episode when he makes chicken thighs with bitter greens and dried crawfish broth. Because you can buy that anywhere. And Jackson Kalb, who still can't taste anything thanks to a recent bout with COVID-19.
He's still on the show. How? He can't be. No, do not tell me this. Why is he still there?
Because he's so good. He's just so good at
what he does. He's not. He's very good at getting other people to taste his food and tell him how he's doing.
Yeah.
If I had somebody that was like coaching me the whole time, you could have me on Top Chef.
I'm not
gonna lie. Does this taste
like
anything? Yeah. And they'd be like, no, that tastes like raw dust. Yeah. I'd be like, oh, okay, I guess I'll start over again.
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding?
Yeah. Jackson Kalb is Mr. Magoo that accidentally goes into an airport and ends up being the pilot of your next flight. Like, that is Jackson Kalb at this point. He's walking around and he's just like, hello, everybody. And then the hat falls on his head and they're like, pilot, sir, we're about to fly off to, you know, Texas, to Houston. And he's like, good show. And he just walks right in and they give him the handles of the plane. And he's just like, oh, this is an interesting drink. And it's like, oh my gosh. Yeah.
He's Paul Rudd in Parks and Rec.
Exactly.
Like, he's the kid who is having everything laid out for him.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't have to struggle at all. I know how my food's going to taste good because I already had other people tasting it the entire time I was cooking.
Yeah.
Like, I tried
to explain it to Kaylee in the sense of, like, if you're Jackson Kalb and you can't taste or smell, essentially you're going off of, how good am I at techniques? And how do I remember this? Like, how do I remember how, like, bitter this certain green is? Or how do I remember how, like, salty
this is? I imagine he's got, like, a full chemistry set, like, kitchen thing when he's not, when they're not filming, and he's like, no, you have to like keep practicing, because if this isn't like at the top of your skull when we're filming, you're not going to be able to do it, and everyone's going to know, and the gig's going to be up, like they're going to know that I can't taste or smell.
That's
ridiculous.
Yeah, he's got like basically a pH test balance in his pocket at all times, so that when somebody says, "How's the acidity on this?" he just dips it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good.
15.
Like, you know. We've got a good 1.3 on the acidic scale. Maybe I'll balance that out with some alkalinity. Here we go. Goodness sake! This is a crime.
It kind of is.
It's a crime.
Let's just say things are going to change. Things are going to change.
Good.
Yeah.
I hope. Dark clouds on
on the horizon.
I need it. Yep. I need it. I need it so badly.
Yeah. Damar Brown worries that he was a little too heavy-handed on his spice in the Scotch bonnet and shrimp stew, but Onwuachi calls it bold in all the best ways. You let those ingredients sing, he says. Buddha Lowe's dish, however, a shrimp and guinea fowl with peanuts and fried plantains, was a showstopper. The judges noted successfully tied into their Nigerian roots, even aspiring Omasu to give Lowe an endearing African nickname. That's right. He gave a contestant an African nickname.
Oh.
Yeah. Buddha Lowe hit that button on the guy. Was like, and just hit it immediately. Yeah.
That's what you want.
When you make somebody feel like it's like, yeah, no, I got to give you a nickname because I will remember you for the rest of time by this name. It's like, okay, then. Gladly.
Perfect. I'm in.
Yeah. And there's the name. Bryce Dallas Howard. That's Ron Howard's daughter. Then you got Chris Pratt. They show up in the elimination round with the Jurassic Park soundtrack. Joe Flam, that's right, another Top Chef alum, appears in an interesting Indiana Jones-esque getup in clear promotional efforts for Jurassic World Dominion.
See, isn't this like, it's hacky, isn't it?
It is. It totally is. And he's wearing Nikes. Like it. He's not even wearing like boots. He's wearing like Nike shoes.
No, I don't want the boots on. They're uncomfortable. I've got a bunion on my toe.
I wear Nikes. Crocs all day, and now you guys are giving me these boots. Like, I hate this. Yeah, but
it's ridiculous. Oh well, you do you, Top Chef.
Exactly. Yeah. After drawing knives, judges are divided into groups. Those crafting the first course will focus on reflecting the essence of the Mosasaurus, a big-mouth sea dinosaur that lived in the Atlantic. The second course is focused on Quetzalcoatlus, a flying dinosaur which remains discovered in Texas. And the third is the Velociraptor, a land dinosaur that was reportedly native to China. So, you know, Houston, China, who cares, right? We're in Houston. It's almost
That's
immediately.
What I was thinking. I was like, why wouldn't they do dinosaurs found in Texas?
Because the one that was is named Quetzalcoatlus. Yeah, I mean, it's Quetzalcoatlus.
Yeah.
Quetzalcoatlus.
Quetzalcoatlus. Quetzalcoatlus.
Quetzalcoatlus. Yeah, it's
Quetzalcoatlus is like isn't that like a it was like a portended like dragon in Mayan culture or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's Mayan or Aztec, but
I know
that's where the name for that dinosaur probably came from. So.
Right. And almost immediately, Judge Tom Colicchio is expecting something dramatic and gory. He didn't get that. most chefs, however, opted for milder interpretations, thinking of the assigned sea creature who can down a great shark in one bite. Brown makes duck of fried oysters with Fresno chow chow and oyster cream. Yeah.
I don't get the connection, but I trust that the presentation maybe helped with that.
Sure. And then Ashley Shanti made shito wings with a watermelon relish in homage to her flying dinosaur, a dish that many judges say was refreshing but lacked crispiness and spice. Because, if it's lacking
relish.
Yeah, if it's lacking anything, they're just going to hammer that. It's like, this is meant to be a very sweet dish, like a dessert. They're like, not enough salt. And it's like, what? Like, they're gonna salt hit and, you
salt
wherever.
And sweet does like pair right. really well, but it totally. Doesn't make sense if you're like right. I mean, I guess with watermelon though, right? It is supposed yeah. to have like salt. So if they did make that critique, yeah. I guess I'd be like, okay then.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just liked how it's watermelon relish. It's shiito yeah, wings. They're like crispiness and spice. So the crispiness of the wings, I guess, and then the spice of the wings. But it's like, what about a flying dinosaur automatically makes it spicy?
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
I mean, crispiness, I get it. Like, you fried the wings, it wasn't crispy. But it's like watermelon relish, like, that's not supposed to be spicy. That's not supposed to be crispy. So what is this? And then Köppen's braised short rib and broccoli with onions and seaweed broth had good flavor despite the beef being too tough. That's right.
That's what the broth's for.
Exactly. Yeah. So the biggest oops, it was an indecisive Jaejung, who is worrying her teammate Lo is uncertain of what to make, which is clear from her dish. Jung makes a lamb duo with a spiced rack of lamb and lamb meatballs with pickled Napa cabbage, creating what judges say was a soggy, unfocused dish. Yeah, not good.
Not good.
But the
it
winners
sounded good by the description.
It did. Yeah, it sounded
if it
great.
Come together, then.
Nah, it didn't come together. It took off, so to speak, and it didn't stick the landing.
That wasn't the flying dinosaur.
No, wasn't. Not at all. But yeah, the judges. Once again, Houston. The winners, anyways. Once again, Houston represents. Judges say that Garcia's team, which used pecans as a consistent ingredient throughout their courses, had the most flavorful dishes. Wallace made an impressive crab croquette for the first course, and judges praise how the flavors came together in Garcia's pork tenderloin. As for Kolb's graphic and gooey fudgy cacao cake, plated with sweet potato, pecan, and a raspberry blood velociraptor footprint, Onwachi says it's the dish that we've all been waiting for. So, yeah, that's right. Jackson Kolb did really well again.
No. Stop. Get that man off the stage right now.
He killed it, man.
He can't taste or smell.
Yeah, but he made a bloody velociraptor
footprint. This is a crime. This is a crime, and I don't even watch the show.
Yeah, it's a fudgy cacao cake with sweet potatoes.
Tell me the man's at least attractive. Tell me that.
Well, if you looked at last week's cover photo for the episode of Top Chef Rundown.
I definitely did.
That's Jackson. That's Jackson. The white dude with the receding hairline. That guy. Yeah. Which it's not receded, but it's receding, it looks like.
It's actively going. It's like, yeah. You can't taste or smell and you've had COVID. Of course, yeah. You're going to have some hair loss. Here we go.
Yeah. Just slight. You know, and nothing against that. I mean, you know.
No, it's happening to me.
Yeah, yeah. It just is what it is.
It's happening to me, and I'm still beautiful. So, people, you can be bald and beautiful, too. That's absolutely real.
Totally real. Another great podcast.
Another great podcast.
Yeah.
They should sponsor us.
They should. Yeah. That would just be to great. Hop in. Yeah. Every once in a while. That'd be awesome.
Tracy, Catherine, please reach out.
Please reach out. Please. but Lo, he was the loser. While Lo presents judges with another stunning dish, smoked alligator with potato, beets, salmon roe, and alligator cream, which that sounds awful. His teammates, including Jung, didn't fare as well. Joe Chan, who makes an overcooked barbecue quail, attempts to channel a dish from the original Jurassic Park film, crafting glazed carrots that Lakshmi calls sad. That's all I can say. Like, if you're
sad.
Yeah, if you're standing in front of the judges and Padma just goes, you know, I tried your carrots, and you're like, and then she's like, sad. You're immediately like, okay, I just want to leave now. Like, I just want to leave this show. I don't want to be here. You have like an out of body experience where you're just like, Padma just eviscerated me on national television, and I have to take it. Like, I can't do anything.
This is sad.
Yeah.
This makes me feel sad for you.
Yeah. Like, this reminds me of
nothing
sad.
Would make me walk off set quicker.
Yeah.
I'd be like, I have to go and contemplate every life choice that I've ever made in order right now.
Yeah. And it's like one of those things, like saltiness. Some people don't like salty stuff. Some, you know, that's too sweet.
I don't know what whatever. Those people are on.
Exactly. But... you can be like, whatever. But when they just go sad, you're like,
sad.
Oh. Emotional-channeled. Ow. Like, yeah, yeah. In the end, Chan goes home with the Austin chef admitting that she didn't execute the dish properly. And it's like, yeah, no, you didn't.
Aww.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
There was a lot, that was the one with the lamb, right? I'm not getting right. it mixed. Yeah. Right. So yeah. I love lamb. And so if you didn't do it properly, then that's you deserve that. But also, yeah. I looked up Jackson Cobb. And he's fine looking. He does look he's like tall. The white man he's that tall. Is fall. He's failing up.
Right.
So stereotypical America, everybody.
Yeah. He might have been part of a fraternity. That's what I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
I don't know why. Cooking fraternity. Yeah, cooking fraternity of some kind where they were like, how did you get this job at the one of the top 50 restaurants? He's like, funny thing, made a call, got a hold of my buddy Rick, who was a dishwasher at the time. And you're like, what?
He worked his way up the company for 5,000 years. And,
right.
And he knew? He just said a word and I got
Yeah. Who knew my buddy Rick, the dishwasher, had that good of a pull at this restaurant? And what do you know? I'm a sous chef. And it's like, what?
It's okay. He's probably very, very talented.
Oh, yeah. That's why he's has to be to far. Get this far. He's got to be. To get this.
I think it's a little silly. That it is. Somebody it kind of is. Taste or smell is getting so far.
Yeah. It's one of those things where he has to be good enough to even get on the show. And then he's on it and he's not eliminated like in the first day.
That's
still
miraculous.
There.
Yeah. So maybe it's the fact that he's missing two senses. So all of his other senses have been heightened and he just feels and looks at the food. And he's like I'm no, going that's to- right.
I'm going to somehow daredevil this.
Exactly. He's like, yeah, I can tell just by the way that this thing's cooking that I'm doing a damn good job.
It's perfect.
See the
boiled.
Smoke? I can see how heavy the smoke is, and I can tell I put the right amount of spices in there.
Since I can't smell burning, I don't know when something's burnt. So... I check it more often.
I check
which
it more
means
often because I'm anxious because I can't taste or smell.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. Maybe the fact that this is all going on, it's like got him on his like triple A game.
Totally. Like, he's and on that's it. When Top Chef Houston episode 8 comes up. Brings tension with dreaded restaurant wars, which restaurant wars, it is a consistent theme on Top Chef. Every season they do restaurant wars. It's four chefs per team, so eight people usually. And what happens is that you have three people that are basically cooking the whole time, including the team leader. And then one other person is doing what they call front of house, essentially taking care of your restaurant patrons, right? You're taking care of, you're like helping the wait staff and making sure people get to their tables and that the tables are counted correctly and that you're doing all these things, right?
Yeah. You're basically managing the whole thing and updating everything on everyone's, you know, progress and all that.
It's, you got back of house, which is everybody cooking and making sure that that's done on time. And then front of house is like, hey, back of house is done. Now we need to execute, right?
Yeah.
And so, but it says it's dreaded restaurant wars and an overdue confession.
Oh, no.
Yup. And it says the remaining
that I'm thinking of.
Yeah, it does say the remaining six Top Chef contestants battle it out, which it's like in my mind, I'm like, there's six? Like, wait a minute. Like, I thought restaurant wars seven. Always had a team of four. Right. Yeah. And then, you know, I was like, what? But anyway, we'll see. What happens, though, is that, you've got episode 8 starting off. There is no quickfire. It's just, you're going to draw knives. This is restaurant wars, right?
Fight.
So, fight. And so it goes. And basically what happens here, it says it requires the chefs to work in teams to conceptualize a restaurant, creating everything from a tasting menu, name, and its actual design. The team with the winning restaurant concept hosted in post-Houston will leave with $40,000. So it's like even a separate challenge that you can win money. And the $40,000, the reason why it's $40,000 is because it's $10,000 per person, and there's four people per team. So Brittany Brito Garley, as much as I love, you know, your articles, there is not six people left. There's eight. It says the remaining six Top Chef contestants battle it out. No,
Brittany, we talked about this.
Yeah, there's four people per team, and one of the so there's eight. There's eight people. So if she's listening, love your article still, but the numbers are off. They don't make sense. But anyway.
Well, like
so,
the six and the eight are very close together.
They are. Yeah, it's close.
They're not like above or next to, but they're very close. They're on a numpad.
Right.
No offense, Brittany.
Offense. Right. No offense. But yeah, quickly the chefs draw knives with Nick Wallace and Jay Jung getting first and second pick, respectively. Wallace chooses Damar Brown and Ashley Shanti for their expertise in Southern cuisine, and then Buddha Low because he's been doing pretty well. And then Jung chose Evelyn Garcia because she's been, like, killing it, and she's from Houston. Smart, considering her three-episode winning streak. Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Then Jackson Kalb, at Garcia's urging. That's right. Garcia urged, like, pick Jackson. Pick him. He's a good guy.
He's a good guy. And Pick lastly, Jackson, he knows the owner.
right. And lastly, Luke Culpin. So Mr. Noma himself, Luke. Wallace's team wastes no time in deciding that they're going to do a women-led Southern-style restaurant heralding the women in their lives with the name Matriarch, and it just ends on a C.
Oh,
so it's like,
that.
Okay. Yeah, it's great. And Shanti, Ashley Shanti, Miss Afrolation. Chef. She's the executive chef, so she's like, I'm the one leading this ship, right? And Lo, who is not experienced in Southern cuisine, decides to be flexible but loses it just a little when Shanti suggests making a bitter lettuce salad. He says, Buddha Lo, who, by the way, he basically tries to say that he is the Restaurant Wars and Top Chef, like, expert. He's watched every episode. He knows what they do or don't like.
Well, me too, Buddha.
And he's like, he basically goes on this rant of like, I know what they, like, I know how each chef was eliminated and what they were eliminated on and why. And
that sounds a little, like, obsessive.
Totally. And, but he says, what I've learned from this competition is they don't like that ish. Yeah, that's right. Though Shanti is taken aback by his comment, she pivots and the team pulls together a solid menu. And Buddha Low is now going to be the front of house guy. Okay? Like, he's doing front of house. And so, like, usually the front of house that, people...
That energy needs to get out of the kitchen,
yeah,
Buddha.
Exactly. Yeah, Buddha, get out of here. That's what they're basically... Yeah.
We know you've been doing well, but, like, right. Go to the front.
Yeah, and most of the time, front of house, they usually do the dessert and it's something stupid simple. Right? Like, basically anybody could make it. We're all chefs, not bakers or patisserie people. So we just need to make something like a pudding or a pie or something like simple that you can make. And so that's what the front of house people do. Then for the first course, Lo rallies together team talents and he creates an array of Southern style snacks. So Parker House rolls, country ham butter, seafood tarts, fried oysters with comeback sauce, all those kinds of things. Which is good. The Parker House rolls, the chefs, the judges, they loved it, which is crazy because Tom Colicchio, he makes Parker House rolls all the time. And he was like, these were some of the best I've ever had. Like, these are amazing. So it's like, wow, they're doing great. Jung's team together decides with Kalb's urging. That's right. Jackson Kalb's trying to shoot his shot, right? Like, that Garcia will be executive chef of their family style Southeast Asian concept called No Name, or spelled No, and then name is N-E-M, so No Nem, which is after a Vietnamese Nem sausage, to play to Garcia's strengths. Culpin, who has struggled to maintain consistency in his seasoning, is noticeably nervous tackling Asian cuisine. Culpin, obviously, he's Mr. Noma. And so he's been ranged on, like, you know, it's too salty. Then they say the next challenge, did you add salt? And he's like, what the heck? he's not hitting it really well. He's like, what is going on? So
it's just like watching him closer, probably.
Totally. Because he's from Noma. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But he struggled to maintain that. It's noticeably nervous tackling the Asian cuisine. But the group moves forward. Garcia makes a pani puri with shrimp and passion fruit vinaigrette that Lakshmi says lacks liquid. So pani puri, so puri being, I think it's either, yes, I think puri is potato. Pani is the liquid, the sauce, the water. So it's like water, potato, something. And so she was saying, like, it lacking liquid, it's not a pani puri anymore. It's like a tart. Like, it's kind of weird. Jung, he makes a snapper summer rolls with papaya, citrus, and avocado. And then Culpin makes a chuchi curry with black cod wrapped in Napa cabbage. Together, the team crafts barbecue nem lettuce wraps with fried Brussels sprouts. Hit among the judges. They love the sausage. They love the Brussels sprouts. And then ends with Kalb's quite crunchy but a bit underwhelming shortbread cookies with citrus curd and coconut whipped cream. Yeah.
There we go.
So Jackson Kalb, he couldn't do it. He couldn't do it. And the whole episode, me and Kaylee, we were watching this, and all I could think in my head was like, okay, fine. He screws up the cookie. Who cares? Usually the people who do the front of house, that's like the direct thing to the judges. So if you do amazing on the front of house, almost inevitably they give you the win. That's what happens. But the food could be just okay, but if the front of house is killing it, they're like, man, we love the restaurant, you talk to us, you did all this stuff for us. It's like, yeah, people like to be treated well, right? Like, that's kind of the whole thing. So if you do that, you'll probably win the challenge. Jackson, like, basically intentionally doesn't talk to the judges. Like, he's always away from their table. He even left just a little piece of paper that said, welcome judges. That was it. He didn't even sit them down at their table. Oh,
my goodness.
He was like going to all these other people who, other people are other people, that's fine, but you're on a TV show with these judges judging you, and he's like filling up wine of some guy and gal in the back seat of like this whole restaurant, and he's extras, laughing with them.
Basically.
Yeah, yeah, extras, basically. And he's laughing with them like, ha, 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 ha. And they kept showing that clip of him laughing, and all I could think was like, oh my God, he is going to get just totally eviscerated. Like, they're going to lose because he's not talking to the judges. Like, he would come up and they'd be like, well, can you describe how to eat this? And he's like, it's free form, you can eat it in any way you would like. And it's like, great, Jackson, so there's no exact way to eat this when we're clearly asking you, how do we eat this? Like, we don't know, which
they're
is
confused,
why we're asking.
And so they asked.
Yeah. But Brittany Garlow here, or Brittany, sorry, I do not want to mess up her name. Brittany Brito Garley. She wrote on here, she does highlight all of those things. The biggest oops was Jackson Kalb came up with a lot of ideas for No Name, and he fails to execute them. In charge of front of house, Kalb neglects to welcome judges at the chef's table in person, and instead leaves them a measly welcome judges handwritten note. To add insult to injury, while laughing and mingling with guests, Kalb lets judges wonder what they're eating as he fails to explain or introduce the dishes. Garcia tries to reel Kalb back in, and she does. She basically is like, hey, you need to talk to the judges. You need to do this. Like, because it's an open kitchen. The judges can see how they're cooking and what they're doing. So she's like trying to be quiet about it, but she's basically like, hey, Kalb, yeah, go talk to the judges. Like, go. And it's like, she says, basically, he needs to explain the method. And he was trying to treat the judges like any other guest. Okay, Jackson. Another major
letdown. Not great.
Yeah, not great. another major letdown. Kolb decides that the moment before elimination is a great time to tell his teammates that he's had a little to no sense of smell the entire competition thanks to a recent bout with COVID. The other chefs are dumbfounded. Kolpin is particularly bothered considering Kolb said his...
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, Kolpin is particularly bothered considering Kolb said his fish was too salty while judges found it undersalted. Yikes. Because it's like it almost sent him home. Like, dude, the biggest thing, the restaurant wars, I came out with a fish that was undersalted. I specifically asked you, is this too salty? And you said, yeah, it's too salty.
It's too salty, as if you could tell.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh. Oh, man.
And this is what I'm talking about, fellas.
Exactly.
This is what I'm talking about. We gotta hold men to a better standard.
Exactly. We gotta hold men accountable.
We can't just be failing up.
Yeah, we can't keep doing that.
No good.
Yeah, no good. Yeah, but the best turnaround, Brown lets out a bunch of expletives when he realizes the ovens for his carrot cake dessert are at just 150 degrees, leaving him little time to put them in another oven and let them cool. But all is not lost. Somehow, Brown preserves what he has, cutting around the raw batter, creating what Judge Tom Colicchio says is the best carrot cake dish he's ever had. Crazy. Like, you totally screw up the baking of it, yet Judge Colicchio, he's like, you saved it. This is my carrot cake baby. Like, this is amazing. And it's like, how? How did I do that? And he's never going to be able to replicate that again. I mean, one, it's a dessert, and two, it's carrot cake. It can be kind of finicky. And three, he didn't even know what he did for that one. Like, he's...
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's impressive nonetheless. The winners, the judges admired Wallace, Shanti, and Brown's Matriarch restaurant so much, stating that it felt like the concept was months, not hours, in the making. The team beamed with pride, with Shanti saying this is the first time she hasn't watered down her food. Shanti is named the winner of the night, which that fits my fantasy. I thought Ashley Shanti from the beginning, I was like, she looks like she might win this. Because Afro-Latian food, one, home run type of food, like, amazing. That's but then on top of that, she looks determined. Like, she looks like, I'm going to cook the best things. So when she got eliminated, I was so sad. Then she won Last Chance Kitchen, comes back, and is killing it. The loser of the episode, it was clear that Team No Name lacked cohesion. They literally didn't even have a name. And consistency. And consistency. Largely thanks to Kolb's direction, or lack thereof. Though judges seem to agree Kolpin made the worst dish, it was Kolb's many suggestions and lack of follow-through that led to most of the group's mistakes. And despite his impressive showing this season, Kolb packs up his knives. He is sent home.
Very good. Finally. Yep. Sorry, Jackson.
But he does have another way of possibly getting back in through Last Chance Kitchen. I have watched the episode of Last Chance Kitchen, but I'm not going to give that up until the next Last Chance.
I'm not going to spoil it, folks.
I'm not going to spoil it.
Cliffhanger for you.
Yeah. Yeah, you can watch it on YouTube. It is on the Bravo YouTube channel. You can watch Last Chance Kitchen. I find it very interesting because those challenges are by far way harder than the TV show challenges. Challenge for Jackson Kolb and the other contestant in Last Chance Kitchen, they basically had to make three different dishes in 45 minutes from, I believe it was like, basically they had to make three dishes perfectly made within 45 minutes of a restaurant they would like to make. So it's like a miniature version of Restaurant Wars. It's you run the restaurant now, so you make an appetizer, an entree, and a dessert, and make it in 45 minutes that perfectly describes your thing. And then on top of that, they have to deliver the food. They said, because of COVID, you now have to deliver this food to us, and so it better be good for takeout. Basically, don't make food that by the time it shows up, it isn't good anymore. Right? Yeah. Like, you need to make food that's good
for
takeout.
Way more difficult.
Right. In a restaurant concept that you like and that you can make in 45 minutes. And it's like, holy crap. And so they go through the whole thing. It's impressive. It's very impressive. But Jackson finally got his comeuppance, and it's like, dude, you're gone. Like, you can't be, you know, you can't be Mr. Magoo pilot, okay? You somebody's got to tell you to stop. And they told him to stop this episode. They said, yeah, no. You're out. And so that was episodes 7 and 8. I mean, Joel, what do you think 9 will boil down to?
Jackson Cobb's return, obviously.
It's gonna be his return. He's gonna come back an episode later, and
he's like, "I'm here to ruin all your dishes because I can't taste your smell."
Yeah, he's like, "Last Chance Kitchen, more like Jackson's Kitchen, am I right?" And everybody's like, "Oh no."
He's like, "Yeah, I just like spat on a plate, and gave it to the judges. They're like, oh my god, it's amazing.
Yeah, oh, this tastes like a ragu." What a bunch of idiots. It's like, Jackson, come on, man.
I don't. Realistically, I think it's gonna be some more cooking nonsense that I can't even like imagine because I don't know the vocabulary.
Will be correct.
I know. That's why I guessed.
Yeah, it says that the next episode they throw a fundraising block party for Houston's Freedman's Town, historical neighborhood in Fourth Ward that served as a destination for African Americans after their emancipation from slavery.
Well, at least it's got an interesting setting.
It does.
And it's in Houston. It's way more Houston-y than this. Well, episode 7's was ridiculous.
Right. I mean, right. It was pretty ridiculous. Just,
they were like, we need money. What can we do? And then they're like, there's a movie coming out, Jurassic World. It's got that Chris Pratt guy, and everybody loves him, right? Ooh. Yeah.
We keep getting that soda water money, and we do not have enough money for these contestants. They're like, what about a movie?
We don't even have enough soda for these contestants.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. It's like, ugh, man. But yeah, so now we move on to just a wonderful set of foods here for Hawaii. One-of-a-kind dishes with Hawaii. Yeah. Hawaii.
Is that what it sound like?
No. Hawaii. Yeah, that's, yeah. But no, Hawaii, really, being an island and having the history they already had before
being
America.
Yes, well, islands, of them, sorry. Devin. Yeah. I know. It's an archipelago.
Hey. Missouri Public Education right here, guys.
Heck yeah, babies. Yep, we know what we're talking about.
Yeah, representing, because I didn't know it ended in ING. Yep, that's what this is. Yeah, but yeah, so the islands of Hawaii, they have lots of influences. I mean, you have your Polynesian influences, then you have Japanese, Chinese influences, then you have American influences over time, but then on top of that, you have native influences, so... Lots of like diversity in foods. When I think of Hawaiian food, most people immediately it's like it's an island, it's Hawaii, or islands, sorry, and it's Hawaii, so tropical coconut. Like that's like I think that's what a lot of people think right off the bat. They're like
get bananas or something.
Right. Coconut, banana, mango, like a lot of fruity type stuff. And yet, I think a lot of people who go to Hawaii, like yourself, or like people on the West Coast, when I think of Hawaii, I mean, Japanese influence, I think of that heavily. But I really think about, like, barbecue, like grilled meat.
That's what I'm thinking.
Huge. Or poke. One or the two. But basically, fish and grilled meat. That's, like, the huge thing.
I think of pig.
Pig. Yeah. Pig. Yeah. Yeah. Big on pig. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so going off first thing here, Spam, big deal in Hawaiian culture. Spam is highly popular, has been for decades. Per capita, Hawaiians are the second largest consumers of Spam in the world, right behind Guam. Yeah. Spam became an important source of protein for locals after fishing around the islands was prohibited during World War II, probably because of like submarines and stuff. That'd be scary, trying to fish around that. In 2005, Hawaiians consumed more than 5 million cans of Spam.
5 million?
Yeah.
That's so much.
That is a lot
of spam. A lot of spam.
Yeah. There was a buddy of ours.
I've never had spam. What does it taste like?
So spam technically is supposed to be the trimmings and things of like that for ham, but also like it's basically just a coagulation of random kind of meats. It's ham and here, I'm going to pull up the exact definition. So spam, okay. It is a brand of canned cooked pork made by Hormel Foods Corporation. Basically, it says here it has pork shoulder and ham. So spam, that's kind of where. So it's pork shoulder and ham. It's a mixture of the two. They use salt, water, and modified potato starch as a binder, sugar, and sodium nitrite. Natural gelatin is formed during cooking in the tins, and then, yeah, it's got a high content of fat, sodium, and preservatives, but that's a good thing. That's what makes it last so long. And they do have, like, low-fat spam. They have lower sodium spam. They've tried to make additions to it. So basically, I guess, like, you'd say, like, shoulder pork ham spam, right? Hmm.
Okay.
But the thing that I know about spam, at least my experience with it, it's okay when you cook it up, like cook it up in a pan and just add any sauce to it. You can put ketchup to it. It probably is going to still taste okay. Mm-hmm. The other thing about spam is we had a buddy in college, me and Kaylee did. His name was Ben, and he grew up, in Oregon, but his family was, heavily Hawaiian. I believe his grandparents and then other extended family still lived in Hawaii. His favorite thing was mashed potatoes with spam. And then his breakfast was like rice with mustard and spam. And he would just microwave it like every day, and have that. And he was like the fittest dude ever. So it was kind of like, I don't know. Spam was his spinach. Like, if he was Popeye, spam was his spinach. He loved spam. And he was always disappointed when he would hear of, like, a Hawaiian day or something in the cafeteria at U of O, and they would not have anything that was spam. They wouldn't have musubi. They wouldn't have any of this stuff. And he was like, you guys call this Hawaiian, and there's no spam. Like, why is there no spam? And we're like, Ben, just go back to your room and it's get okay. your can of spam. Yeah. And he was just like, I shouldn't have to. Ugh.
I shouldn't have
and
to
he
do
just
that.
Keep going. Yeah. It was. But he was. He loved running. He was super fit. I remember you telling me about him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Half the time I remember Ben is with his shirt off. I mean, he was a fit dude. Very funny. Great guy. Miss him all the time. He was so funny. But yeah, love spam. That was like his breakfast of choice. Any type of starch with spam, it was like, yep, that's mine. That's my breakfast. And it's like, man. But spam musubi, I really like. That's when you add any type of soy sauce, teriyaki, whatever base sauce to sauteed spam, like in a pan. Then you add, some people add wasabi. Sometimes you can add a little bit of like egg, and then you put it on top of a little brick of rice, and you can use the spam container to make it, which is even like better. And then you wrap it in seaweed and spam musubi, just absolutely wonderful. And it, heavy Japanese influence, but it has that American twist along with the Hawaiian Islands. Perfect little food. It's so good. And then the next one here, cellophane noodles. It's traditionally Chinese. It's called finzi, but it is a transparent noodle made from the starch such as mung bean starch, potato starch, sweet potato starch, tapioca, or canna starch. Cognac noodles, or konjac, is what some people can call it. I've had those noodles inside of hot pot. Very chewy. But they do have the exact shape of regular noodles. So kind of interesting. Yeah, yeah. But heavily used in Chinese cuisine, but definitely on the islands of Hawaii. They're in a lot of Southeast Asian dishes. But it does say here that the United States and Hawaii, where cuisine is heavily influenced by Asian cultures, cellophane noodles are known locally as long rice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, supposedly because the process of making the noodles involves extruding the starch through a potato ricer, they are used most often in chicken long rice, a dish of cellophane noodles and chicken broth that is often served as luaus. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
I think I've had this before. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I think I've had them at, we've got a place out here called Hoo Hot.
Yes. Yeah. And you can add that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mongolian Grill, man. We don't have those out here. Hoo Hots.
What a shame.
I know. That was a good place. Good. Yeah. It's delicious. I like getting the eggs. Oh, man. I'd grab like three or four eggs and tell them just like,
get that stuff in there.
I know. It was good. But the next one here, before I get it started, when you were in Hawaii, what do you remember food-wise getting in Hawaii all the time?
I don't know. We went to Walmart.
Alcohol. Yeah.
I actually only got drunk once when I was out there. I did not do that much drinking. Yeah. I was like 24 and still in my good kid phase. So.
Oh, okay.
Or no, yeah. like 22. 22 and still in a good kid phase. So that's a little bit more excusable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we like honestly, so we were renting this house, and it's like, of course, this ridiculously sized house on this like cliff edge thing and whatever with private beach, all the stuff that like white people do.
Right.
And I remember we didn't really like have like a lot of Hawaiian stuff because we just went to Walmart and we're cooking things at the house. We were probably just like getting our, you know, regular stuff. I remember going to a couple of restaurants while we were out there.
Yeah.
One of them was the one that I had the alcohol, and I genuinely cannot remember what I ate. I don't remember eating anything, even.
Hawaii, honest. Friends. Hawaii.
Yeah. Good time.
Yeah.
But I do know that I had, I think, mahi-mahi.
Yeah.
I think,
very popular. Very popular.
A restaurant out there, and it was really, really good.
Yeah,
that's all I remember. Though I mean, we're talking about something that's almost a decade back.
Yeah,
now,
true.
So I can be excused for forgetting things, but also like I was a very much different person, like even back then. And so I'm not very evolved on cuisine now. So you could only imagine
back
like
then.
A Joel who's like even pickier. Like I'm not picky now, actually. Now I'm like give me whatever and put it in a dish and I'll eat it.
Yeah. Unless it's spicy. Then, I know you don't like spicy stuff.
I'm trying. I've been working on it for a whole year. A whole year now, and I'm getting better. I can have Dijon mustard now.
I can't.
I'm horrible, folks. Don't be like me. Be better. Be better.
Be better.
Yeah, be better. No, it's not that hard, too. It's a very low bar. Very, very low.
I just know, like, the thing that I think of in my head is, like, a local Hawaiian, you know, very Polynesian, like, grew up on the islands, is walking by this, you know, vacation house you got, and all he smells is basically like pasta with a red meat sauce, like a ragu.
No, it would have been Alfredo. It would have been
Alfredo. White.
Thank you very much.
And then all he hears outside of the windows that are open is, oh my gosh, I can't believe how much black pepper I added. This is almost spicy. And then he just shakes his head like, like, why do we aloha to these people? Why do we do this?
I'm gonna let everyone at home know my skin tone is alabaster. Like, it's the whitest white you could imagine. I am not good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's why
I am imperialism incarnate. That's what I am.
And that's why the catchphrase for you is, does that have mayonnaise? That's spicy.
Does that have mayonnaise? That's a spicy spice.
Yeah, that's a spicy spice.
I'm terrible. Like, and I know. I'm trying to get better. And my recovery has been very good.
Yeah.
But it's taking me time.
Yeah.
And that's that's the way of it.
Right.
That's where we're at right now.
Yeah.
I wish I was better, and I'm working on it, but I'm not, so I won't be.
So, yeah. So now we're going to crack seed. Crack seed is a category of snacks that originated in China. It is a highly popular in many regions, such as Hawaii. Crack seed are preserved fruits that have been cracked or split with the seed or kernel partially exposed as a flavor enhancement. This type of snack is commonly referred to in the Cantonese language as si mui or si moi in Hawaii. It arrived in Hawaii during the 19th century when Cantonese immigrants were brought to work on the plantations. The larger numbers of Japanese who later came to the work on the plantations adopted the snack, being similar to the Japanese umeboshi. So, yeah.
That sounds so interesting. I would love those.
Yeah. And they have a picture here. It's this is all through Wikipedia, by the way. Great on their sources in Hawaiian food. I did check them out. This one's from Dennis Hollier, The Sweet and Sour Life, Hana Hoau, from 2006-2007, and then cybersnacks.net. It was archived in their original posting from 2006 of what is crack seed. But it shows the Crack Seed Center, and it's like this little store, and it's got all these, you know, fruits and things where, like they were saying, it's just cracked in half, and you can see the seed, and it's just this fruity, nutty thing. Like, you eat it, and it's super good, and people are loving it. They're buying bags and bags of it. I know. Like, basically, there's got to be a website. Oh, wait, there is. It's called onlyfromhawaii.com. That place has a bunch of stuff frozen or chilled, on sale, beverages, snacks, including any chocolates, crackers, Lahing snacks, and Chinese seeds. Huh? Yeah. Mm. And they have a bunch of stuff. They have Frank Foods Franks, so the red Franks.
Oh, yeah.
Portuguese sausage. They have char siu manapua, which is basically like bao buns. They got everything. The kimchi. They have the maize teriyaki beef patties. That's right. Maize. And then Ono Ono Kahlua brand turkey. That's
Kahlua
right.
Kahlua brand turkey. Okay. Yeah. You get me on board now that you're talking about my – this is my language right here.
Yeah. See, hold on. Here, I will send this to you now via our own messenger that doesn't have anything related to a social media network of any kind. This is all good stuff, man.
I love this stuff. I'm Aloha, with that chicken curry.
Yeah, from Aloha to your doorstep. Huh? Look at that. On sale right now, as of this recording, you have Aloha ginger sesame miso.
What's the shipping? Because last time I tried to get something cold.
So I'm gonna add midpok kauyuke sauce, which is basically the super red like beef pork sauce. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna add that. I'm gonna add some Hawaiian haupia, which is luau pudding turkey. Squares. Yeah, I'm gonna add the Kahlua turkey. Like can, whatever you want to call it.
It's like a tub.
It's like a tub.
It's like a butter tub.
Yeah.
It says no reviews yet. Be careful with that stuff.
Oh, man. No reviews yet. Oh, be careful.
You can be the first one if you live.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay.
It looks really good, though, actually.
It does. It does look super good. All right. So I added those three items. Let's take a look and see here what they say. Because, like, okay, yeah, all three items. So, Ono Ono Kahlua Turkey is $11.19. Mid-pack Kauyuki sauce is $4.49. And then Hawaii's
US dollars.
Best... Right, US dollars, yeah. Hawaii's best Hawaiian haupia luau pudding squares, that is $4.99. So that's $20.67, okay? That is how much that should cost. Technically. Okay. That is... Hold on a second. So,
wait, how much is this shipping?
Hold on a minute.
This is what I brought up. This is what we were discovering.
I know. So, by the way, on their front page of their website, they talk about how much you order depends on how much of a discount you get.
Oh, yeah. Maybe you need
in
to put
shipping.
In some more stuff. Yeah.
I would need to add a list of items. Yeah. I would need to add a ton because $40 to $64.99 is you get 3%. So I'm getting zero general discount. So I'll go to checkout.
Yeah, let's just see the base price for this.
Yeah, ship to my address.
Cold goods.
Totally. I said ship to my address, puts in my Oregon address.
Let's you should have put mine in. We could have seen how much it was going to be for all us poors out here.
So I hit continue on Oregon here, and it says, we reserve the right to restrict or limit shipments to any state or region within the continental USA if it exceeds the limits or capabilities of our e-commerce platform. We currently do not ship to addresses in Kansas. We do not ship to addresses outside the USA. It's like, okay, that's fine.
Is Kansas just like the national, like, nope?
Yeah, right? Like, nope. And see, that's the thing. It says we do not ship. See, I have Oregon in here, and it says that it's not. Hold on a second.
Hold on a second. This is just weird. Ship to Oregon? That's a coastal state. Come on.
It should be easy. Oh, my God. It's basically telling me, like, no. We're not going to ship this to you.
So where do they ship if they don't ship to Oregon?
So I know, right? So I'm going to add, like, five of these pudding squares. So
yeah, add a whole bunch.
Yeah, that way it's, like, over $40. I'll get a discount.
Over $40?
Yeah, I'll get...
And then they'll take it to Oregon.
Oh, see, I got a discount. I got a discount. I got a dollar. A dollar 37. So I'm getting six packages of the luau pudding squares and then the pak kua... Kawa Yuki sauce, and then the Ono Ono Kahlua turkey. Yeah, I agree with your shipping policy. Just make sure that you understand it's Oregon and not Kansas. Yeah, all right.
We're not in Kansas. So
there's the, yeah, ship to my address. Oh, it's still telling me, like, nope, we're not going to ship to you. All right, fine. We're going to do.
We got to ship somewhere.
We're going to do Joel. Let's do
Los
Joel.
Angeles, California. That's probably where you're going to want to go.
So
that's probably it.
That's yeah. It might be the only address. Yeah, yeah. Let's see here. I'm gonna do my old address in Missouri.
They have pancake mixes, and they look great. They've got a Lilikoi passion fruit pancake mix.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So let's go. Let's
crackers for breakfast.
Yeah, man.
What? I'm a cracker, and I don't eat crackers.
It doesn't want to ship to Missouri either. No Missouri shipments.
Oh, no. Yeah. It's past Kansas. That's the picture right there. It's past Kansas. Past so they're like, Kansas. No.
All right. Well, the next one here, it's Leu Leu, L-A-U, L-A-U, or Lau Lau, maybe. Otherwise known as Lu in Tonga, or Palusami in Fiji and Samoa and Rakua, and the Cook Islands. It is a Polynesian dish consisting of cooked taro leaves, containing fillings such as pork, fish, or coconut cream. An old Hawaii lau lau was assembled by taking a few leaves and placing a few pieces of fish and pork in the center. In modern times, the dish uses taro leaves, salted butterfish, and either pork, beef, or chicken, and is usually steamed on the stove. Lau lau is a typical plate lunch dish and is usually served with a side of rice and macaroni salad. Yeah. Huh. So, you know, get your leaves on, have some meat in the inside. It'll be good. It'll be good.
And now that we're moving into summer, like, macaroni salad sounds really good.
I know. There's a place out here called Hawaiian Time, and they make a macaroni salad that is purely just mayonnaise, salt, and black pepper. And I love it.
That's amazing. I love that.
Yeah, it is.
I don't have to do none of the fuss. Everything that I'm after is there.
Totally. Totally. I mean, it basically, I remember, so they had it was like a volcanic something chicken. And me being who I am, I love spicy food. So I was like, yeah, like, sure, whatever. Throw it on, right? And they were like, well, what spice level do you want? I'm like, well, what's
it's
like
a good medium to spicy,
right? They had like mild hot, and then it said like Hawaiian or something to the extent of that, and I was like, I was like, do Hawaiian, like, fine, whatever. And so I get it and I'm looking at it and I'm like, yeah, that's redder than, you know, basically who I was with at the time. I'm like, yeah, mine's a lot redder than yours, and mine has a ton of what I thought at the time was green onion. I thought, man, I got a ton of green onions on here. And I took a huge bite, and I realized that those were little Thai green chilies, and they were all over this chicken. And it did. It lit me up. I was sweating like crazy. It was so hot. The person that I was there with, a buddy of mine, he basically just said, oh, well, you know, I got this extra thing, and he did. He got an extra side order of the macaroni salad to take home to his family. And I literally ate his whole side of macaroni salad and had to buy him another macaroni salad at the end because I told him, I said, dude, this is like the third cup of like the drink that I got, which was like a regular medium sized drink. I had filled that thing up like four times. And the fourth time I filled it up, they gave me weird looks like, what is this guy doing? Like
he's taking all our liquids.
Exactly. Yeah. Like he keeps pumping out the Coke Zero like it's going out of style. Like, what is going on here? And so I'm just like, oh my gosh. And he's like, well, here, eat the, like, this is going to cool your mouth down way better. Because I ran out of my little side portion of macaroni salad in like 5 seconds. And he gave me the rest of that. So I bought him another like large side so he could take it back to his face. But I remember feeling so bad. And he's just like, I thought you said you could handle spice. I'm like, dude, I can. Like, this is so spicy. Why is this so spicy? Like, man. And it did lit me up. And I always know when it lights me up because I will sweat. And there's just, like, my nose becomes just a faucet. It's just like, it just
runs. Oh, yeah, mine too.
Constantly. And so I'm sitting there doing that next to this person that's like, dude, I just wanted to eat some chicken and rice and take home some macaroni salad, and you're doing this.
You're ruining people's meals because and the audacity, the caucasity that you had was too great.
Yeah, yeah. It, like, this person isn't a boss. This person isn't somebody who I need to show off to. Like, this is just a normal buddy friendship, and I'm sitting there going, oh, my God, I can't handle this.
He's
just
like, he's like basically a classmate, and you're ruining his day.
Dying in front of him. And that's the other thing is when something's so spicy, you don't eat it as fast either. And so, like, I'm going slower than he is. I'm taking up all of our time. And he's just like, oh, my God. And then I'm having to buy him more macaroni salad. It was an embarrassing moment. Let's just say that. But you got to be careful when doing those things. But the next one here, Lomi Lomi Salmon. It's Lomi salmon. A lot of people say the double Lomis, but it's a side dish in Hawaiian cuisine. It is a fresh tomato and salmon salad. It was introduced to Hawaiians by early Western sailors. It's typically prepared by mixing salted shredded salmon with tomatoes, sweet Maui onions, and occasionally scallions, and sometimes crushed ice if it's not refrigerated. It is always served cold. So it's kind of like a ceviche in a way. I will say it doesn't have any acidity besides the tomatoes. So, interesting.
I don't believe you.
You don't believe me about Lomi Lomi salmon? You don't think
maybe you're right. You're probably right.
Yeah, all right.
I don't know. After your failings with the dude, spiciness on that chicken. Man.
See, I told you. It was an embarrassing moment in life. It was...
My confidence in you has been permanently deflated. I'm just like, I don't know if Devin knows what he's talking about when it comes to food. Yeah. I have no idea.
He thought green onions. He thought green Thai chilies were green onions.
Were green onions. They could not look any more different.
You can't tell the seeds.
That's something that I would do too, though. I'd be like, I could do it. I could do it. And then, no, absolutely not.
You got luau food. Or pule fafa in French Polynesian, or ro-ro in Fiji. It's a traditional Polynesian stew. The name of this dish in Hawaii and other parts of the Pacific is derived from its main ingredient, taro leaves, which are cooked down and coconut milk is added. Yeah. So basically, that's like just the stew instead of filling it with something, right? Kind of like lau lau. So it's the stew version. And then you've got pasteles. Which is technically originally from the Caribbean and the English-speaking Caribbean. But that is a traditional dish in several Latin American and Caribbean countries, in Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, Venezuela, Panama, Trinidad and Tobago, and the Caribbean coast of Colombia. The dish looks like a tamal, but in Hawaii they are called pateles, in a phonetic rendering of the Puerto Rican pronunciation of pasteles, as discussed below. So you have pasteles, and Hawaii they called pateles. So no S before the T. That's how you know it goes that way. But they wrap it in banana leaves, so it should be good. should be good.
Yeah.
And then there is poi, or some people call it popoi. Popoi is a traditional staple food in the Polynesian diet made from starchy vegetables, usually breadfruit, taro, or plantains. It's pink in color.
Oh.
Very pink. Like, okay. Whoa. It says here that water is added to starch during the mashing and again just before eating to achieve the desired consistency, which can range from highly viscous to liquid. In Hawaii, this is classified as either one finger, two finger, or three finger, alluding to how many fingers are required to scoop it up. The thicker the poi, the fewer fingers required to scoop a sufficient mouthful. Yeah.
Huh. What a weird unit of measurement.
Yeah. Yeah. It does say here, poi can be eaten immediately when fresh and sweet or left to ferment and become sour, developing a smell reminiscent of plain yogurt. A layer of water on top can prevent fermenting poi from developing a crust. So, yeah. Okay. But making poi. Hmm. Making poi.
Making poi.
That kind of sounds a little dirty. I'm making
poi.
You're
the one who said it.
I know. Yeah. Sorry, folks. But yeah, Portuguese sweetbread. This is the next one. It's a bread made with milk, sugar, eggs, yeast, flour, and sometimes lemon peel to produce a subtly sweet, lightly textured loaf or rolls. It's a slightly different recipe, and it's made during Easter. And so the Portuguese sweetbread, really, it reminds me of, like, Hawaiian rolls. Like, legit. Like, that's what it reminds me of. If you've ever had like Hawaiian rolls or Hawaiian, what do they call it? The buns, right? From, I think it's Hawaiian King something. Then that is your like Portuguese sweetbread. Oh,
I love that stuff.
Yeah. It's amazing. The bread was brought to Hawaii by Portuguese immigrants from Madeira and the Azores under the name Hawaiian rolls and are now considered a quintessential dish in Hawaiian cuisine. And they're widely eaten throughout the United States. Yeah, well, for those of us who know. I mean, yeah. But, yeah, the next one here, which I find to be, like, I've made this at home before. I don't think it was anywhere near, like, the original here. But Loco Moco. Loco Moco is a dish featured in contemporary Hawaiian cuisine. It's basically the Hawaiian version of a hamburger, and there's, like, no bun, right? So, yeah, totally Hawaiian. There's many variations, but the traditional Loco Moco consists of white rice topped with a hamburger, a fried egg, and brown gravy. Variations may include bacon, ham, spam, tofu, kalua pork, Portuguese sausage, teriyaki beef, teriyaki chicken, mahi-mahi, shrimp, oysters, and other meats. Yeah. But you just crack those eggs on top of your hamburger that's on top of rice, and then the brown gravy on top. Loco Moco. Hmm. Love it. Love it. I mean, I don't know what – if Moco is not good, then I don't know why you're putting Loco in front of it. Because I would think crazy good.
Right.
That's what
– crazy good.
Yeah, crazy good. But yeah, they show a plate lunch with a macaroni salad and soba noodles on the side with the Loco.
Yum.
Moco. Yeah. I –
that sounds
like,
good.
Can't get enough of that. Next thing we've got is saimin. It is a noodle dish soup common in the contemporary cuisine of Hawaii, traditionally consisting of soft wheat egg noodles served in a hot dashi, which is like a broth, garnished with diced green onions and then thin slices of kamaboko. Modern versions of saimin include additional toppings such as char siu, sliced spam, sliced egg, or shredded nori. When Chinese dumplings are added to the noodle soup, it is seen on menus as the heartier wonton min. All saimin, or saimin, establishments have their own often secret recipe for the soup base, but primarily use kombu and dried shrimp. So it's like Hawaiian, you know, like Hawaiian ramen, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty good. Pretty good looking stuff.
Secret formula.
Secret formula. One of the last ones before we go to the stereotypical Food Network list. We've got plate lunch. Play lunch is a quintessentially Hawaiian meal, roughly analogous to Southern U.S. meat and threes. However, the Pan-Asian influence on Hawaiian cuisine and its roots in the Japanese bento make the plate lunch unique to Hawaii. Standard plate lunch consists of two scoops of white rice, macaroni salad, and an entree. A plate lunch with more than one entree is often called a mixed plate. And that's kind of like that Hawaiian time. You can add more if you want to. And yeah, it's a mixed plate. It is two scoops of rice, your macaroni salad, and then whatever else you're ordering. I mean, perfect. Like, two starchy things. Like, why have salad?
No. Yeah.
Why have vegetables in this? We don't need
I'm not
that.
Looking to live longer. Yeah. I'm looking to have a good time here.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know what? I'm going to eat rice for dinner like in 30 minutes. So, it's what's up.
It's what's up. Yeah.
I don't need leaves, although I do really go for a salad sometimes, but not right now. We're talking about Hawaii and this stuff. I don't want leaves. I want the good stuff.
We want the starches, the meats, the cheeses.
There has been like a lot of starch vegetables.
Totally.
That have been mentioned. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, that's the good stuff.
Right. Yeah. And it does say here, it reflects the Asian influence. A lot of popular entrees are Japanese origin chicken katsu, fried boneless chicken, breaded with panko, beef teriyaki or teri beef. A common side dish with plate lunches is fried noodles, often chow mein, chow fun, or sai min noodles. Entrees of Hawaiian origin include kalua pua or roast pork, and lau lau, pork or other meat wrapped in the taro leaf, and then lomi lomi salmon and hapuya, a coconut dessert. And then Korean entrees include kalbi and meat jun. Yeah. And then Okinawan shoyu pork is another big one. And then we go to the Aloha State through Food Network. And what they have is Kona Coffee, very popular, Daylight Mind Coffee Company. Kona Coffee is one of Hawaii's prized exports. So if you're looking to get a little bit of Hawaii in your morning, get you some Kona Coffee. That's where that's at. And then shaved ice, so Ululani's shaved ice. It is so much more than a snow cone. In Hawaii, the most popular shave ice stands sell fluffy mountains of ice shaved to nearly fluffy consistency with very sharp blades. Ululani's arguably has the fluffiest and finest on Maui, if not the state, taking it up a notch by offering a wide variety of popular and exotic flavors like lychee, tiger's blood, wedding cake, pickled mango, and wet lemon peel.
Tiger's blood.
Yeah, it's a little odd. The tiger's blood. Like, I didn't need that, you know.
I've had lychees before. Yeah. I do not enjoy that flavor.
Yeah, it's
do
a.
I not like it.
It wasn't as sweet as I thought it should have been, you know?
Like, right? That's kind of where I was, too. I was just like, what is going on?
Yeah. And then the next one here, hula pie at Duke's Waikiki. It's not like anyone needs an excuse to go to the iconic Duke's Waikiki, which overlooks the famous beach, but its hula pie has become a favorite with locals and visitors. It's made with macadamia nut ice cream piled high on a chocolate cookie crust and topped with chocolate fudge. Ooh, yum. Yeah. I mean, this thing looks amazing. Like, yeah, I can't get enough of that. Garlic shrimp at Romy's, which speaks for itself. It's basically just grilled shrimp with a bunch of garlic on it. They also go over strawberry mochi. So Two Ladies Kitchen, they have a piece of mochi cut in half, and it cuts the strawberry and the red bean paste, right? I love mochi. Love it to death. And anytime they add fruits to it, it makes it like 20 times better. So that's always good. Then you have poke at Da Poke Shack. Da Poke Shack is appropriately named since it does sell some great poke, and it is a shack. Freshness is what sets this place apart. Sometimes fishermen will walk up with the day's catch, impressing everyone in a long line. The wet Hawaiian is the most popular poke, with a simple inamona or a kuki nut mix. Diners who prefer more heat should try the spicy garlic sesame or Pele's Kiss. I don't know anybody named Pele, but okay.
Pele's Kiss.
Pippi, maybe? I don't know.
I have no idea. Pippi? It sounds like it'd be Pippi, but it could be Pie Pie.
Yeah, there's a lot of P's and K's. That's all I know. Many agree that the best Hawaiian food is at Helena's Hawaiian Food in Kalihi, Oahu. There's almost no parking, so be prepared to hunt for a space on the street. There's usually a line. In fact, this place gets extra crowded. Man, they're talking a lot about the crowds and how bad it is to get there, and that's not very nice.
This is what I'm talking about. You know? This is what I'm talking about. People need to stop going to Hawaii for vacation.
Yeah.
It's already overrun, and we're damaging the ecosystem. Yeah. The food's amazing, but we can observe and appreciate from afar.
Yeah. But you gotta get the Pipi Kalua or Kaula, a salted dried beef. Helena's is more like Kalbi, but it is better than any place in town. The meat is tender, tasty.
Well, you know what? Yeah. I take back what I said. I think I'm gonna go there right now because that sounds good.
Yeah, buy you a ticket. And then there
I can't
is,
afford that.
Yeah,
my goodness. I imagine like Hawaiian air flight tickets gotta be like thousand something bucks right now.
Totally. They have to be pretty high.
Yeah, they're expensive.
Yeah. And then Cocoa Puffs from Liliha Bakery. It's been iconic since the 1950s. They provide a unique balance of sweet and salty as the chocolate explodes in your mouth. The Cocoa Puffs are so popular, the bakery sells between 4,800 and 7,200 per day, year after year, that they are sold 24 hours a day, Tuesday through Sunday, at the original location on Liliha Street. Yeah. And then right here, Mahi Mahi at Roy's. See, that's probably where you had it. Mahi Mahi. Looks very fancy.
No. Definitely
one
not.
One Roy's.
If it looks fancy, that's not where I ate.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you didn't eat it there then.
I was on Kauai.
Okay.
The Hawaiian Islands. So.
Yeah.
Which I love. I love that one because it's like the most nature-esque. There's it's got the most parkland and all that stuff, and
it was a very
beautiful island, especially compared to what the other ones like. I've heard that like Maui's really pretty and all that. I mean, it's all pretty because it's Hawaii, but like the prettiest one because it's still like more naturescape than anything. Kauai,
there you go, folks. From the person that traveled there. Bam, bam.
Probably half the people listening have traveled there. It's just you who hasn't gone.
Yeah, I'm trying to like take it all in. I'm like, ooh, whenever I go,
I someday make it there.
Yeah, and then whenever I'm like, everybody's talking about airplane prices. I'm like, guys, have you looked at boat travel prices? My gosh,
they got like a ferry that takes like 2.5 days. It's 2.5 days. Yeah. I think that works, right? It's still about half the price of the airplane ticket, but it takes 2.5 days.
Is $1,900 cheap for boat travel?
You're not given a bed or anything. You have to stay standing because it's so full.
You have to hold on to the railing. as you go up and down in the waves. Yeah.
I managed to talk to the captain. He said I could lay down if I get on the lifeboat.
Right. Yeah. It'll be fine. Yeah, but pancakes at Moke's Bread and Breakfast. Basically, in Hawaii, there has been a boom in business. Yeah, for pancakes. Hawaii, they've had a boom in business over the last 10 years or so, especially with visitors from Japan. On any given day, you'll see lines on the streets, especially Kailua, for breakfast spots that serve signature pancakes. So, you got these pancakes.
There's a place that's, like, starting to get known for pancakes. That's a good sign.
That just means
good people there.
Right. Good people. That's,
Because pancakes
if you do a biscuits
amazing.
And gravy, a waffles, a pancake, eggs.
I mean, breakfast in general, but,
biscuits
and gravy also, yes. But, like, pancakes, that's very solid.
Yeah. That's solid stuff. That's top tier activity. That's what that is.
Not to say that I don't like waffles.
Right.
I love waffles and usually go for a waffle before a pancake. But, like, pancakes are just, like, wholesome.
Dude, yeah. Pancakes are amazing. I know everybody has these discussions of what's better, a pancake or a waffle. Both of them have amazing traits. But a pancake, you can literally make a pancake anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't make a waffle anywhere.
No,
you have to have a waffle iron.
When society crumbles, we're all going to be pancake people. Nobody will be a waffle person anymore.
Exactly. Yeah.
Except for the rich people until they get eaten.
Right. And then we take their waffles. bye-bye.
The great waffle resolution of 2120.
The waffle raids. Yeah. Oh, man.
They wanted some freaking waffles, man. They got those little cups for the syrup.
We're tired of making pancakes on our shields. Yeah, that's, I'm telling you, man. But yeah, the next one here, Manapua, Sing Chang Yuan. Honolulu's Chinatown is the oldest in the United States and a haven for Manapua, also known as Char Siu Bao. But they almost make that Hawaiian sweet roll over Char Siu Bao, which is really good. Basically, barbecue pork, barbecue beef inside of a hot roll. The next one here is oxtail soup from Asahi Grill. Then you have Malasada. From Champion. Malasada, those are like the Portuguese donuts. They're balls of sweet dough that are deep fried into a light, airy donut, then rolled in sugar. Sometimes you can get them filled with custard or chocolate. However you eat them, Champion's Malasadas are beautifully crisp outside. Yeah. Gotta like a crispy donut filled with something like curd or, you know, chocolate. Rolled in sugar. How could that be hated in any way?
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then plate lunch at Rainbow Drive-In. That's a very popular one there, along with a Mai Tai at the Mai Tai Bar. Did you have a Mai Tai while you were there?
Mm-hmm.
No? No?
Yeah. No, I did.
Oh, you did? How many?
I did. I think I only had one because I was switching them up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's a good choice.
I mean,
don't get stuck on one thing.
Yeah, I don't want to get stuck on one thing when I'm on vacation. I'm there to try stuff.
Right.
I mean, back then it was less about food and more about alcohol, but, you know.
Right. Right.
And I've just happens. Expanded that process to everything.
Right. Right. But yeah, one of the last ones here, Lily Koi Pai, are at Hamura's Saimin. Although Hamura's is famous for its Saimin, most people are obsessed with Lily Koi, a passion fruit pie. It basically looks like a key lime pie, but it's a passion fruit, so it's like kind of yellow, and it's got the whipped cream on top. Duke.
Yum.
Has an intense tanginess, but the chiffon helps to lighten it. Thank you, chiffon. Then there's pineapple, big on Hawaii. Everybody adds it to pizza, which is super good. I like it, but the Canadians stole that, which is interesting. Hawaiian pizza was made in Canada. That's where it originates. Yeah. The Canadians. They just said, we're Hawaiians now. Here you go. That's how good pineapple is.
Yeah. I mean, I love pineapples. So.
Yeah. And that's, I love
pineapple. So I used to not like pineapple that much.
Yeah.
And when I was in Hawaii on a catamaran, the widest story you've ever heard. they had like a breakfast bar, and I was like, oh, pineapple. Well, I mean, if I'm gonna have pineapple, like, I should at least try it when I'm in Hawaii, right? Like, it's gotta be like the freshest you can get it. And that's when I fell in love with pineapple. I like it, something just clicked, and I was like, oh, that's what it's about. And now it's like one of my favorite fruits.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, pineapple for me, it is the sweetest, yet it can be slightly sour, and the texture of it adds to its, like, I guess, validity of it being like a super fruit, right?
Yeah.
Like, it has a texture that is not like an orange, which it very well could try to be. It doesn't have a texture like an apple where it's kind of granular and whatever. It is just a fruity bite. Like, that is pure and simple what it is. And when it can be sweet and slightly sour, that means you can add it to savory things. Hence, pizza or, like, teriyaki burgers or whatever.
Yeah, teriyaki
They add
burgers.
The pineapple. Yeah, they add the grilled pineapple. So it's got this thing where it can be savory, sweet, but it is, like, the ultimate fruit as well. So get with it, people. Jump on the pineapple boat. That's all I'm saying.
I think my favorite thing about it is if you have enough of it, then it, like, just destroys your taste buds.
Yes.
I'm totally for that when it's, like...
Isn't that
like,
weird?
No, something that takes the paint off.
Right.
And, like, lets me regrow it.
I find that
with my skincare products, that with my taste buds, just, like, no, rip it all off. I'll make new stuff. It'll be better.
There's a mental illness this is associated with, but I like anything that, like you said, just destroys your tongue, whether it's with salt, spice, sweetness, sour. For some reason, I immediately am just like, oh, this food is the pinnacle of whatever.
It's so much flavor, I couldn't handle it.
I couldn't handle like that kind of thing. That's how good it was. Yeah. But those are the favorites in Hawaii, and there's many people who live in Hawaii that would probably tell you a few other places and hidden gems.
I think the first one they would say is don't talk about us without us at the table.
Right. That's probably what they would say. We're leaving Hawaii, which is not your favorite, but the next state is your favorite on the random wheel.
You mean the gambling's my favorite.
Yeah, the gambling.
I love the gambling. I'm all about that game of chance. I got to have my guess, and if I win, then it's my podcast. That's how it works.
So where are we going?
We're going to go to... Ooh, you know what? Wait, what did I guess last time? I think Vermont or something.
Right. I think you guessed something in the Northeast.
Yeah. This time I'm going to guess. Have you done Kentucky yet?
No, haven't done Kentucky.
I'm going to guess Kentucky.
I'm going to guess. I'm going to guess a pretty random one. I'm going to go with specifically South Dakota.
I was like, specifically, what are you talking about? You have to name a state. And I was like, there are two Dakotas.
All right, so Kentucky or South Dakota, hit and spin it.
Spin that wheel.
It's zooming in. It's zooming in. South Dakota.
Oh.
Nebraska.
Right. Nebraska.
Nebraska.
What? That's like...
Cornhusker state.
That's Western Kentucky, basically.
That's just far west Kentucky. It's fine.
What in the world?
You know, I'm ready for Nebraska just because I only know it as the Cornhusker.
I literally know nothing about that whole state.
And I've been to Omaha a couple times because of the College World Series, the baseball for college. Championships.
Because he's a straight guy.
Because I'm straight sportman. that's why. So it's just one of those things. But you know,
what do you mean? It's just one of those things. We're gonna have to do Nebraska, folks. It's just one of those things.
It's just one of those things. I don't know anybody. Like, do you know a single soul that says Nebraska?
I don't think people live in Nebraska.
Born and raised. I think it's a lie. I think it's a government conspiracy.
I think it's just a giant Area 51.
Right. They even made a movie called Nebraska, and it didn't have color. There's no color in Nebraska.
Well, they did.
Okay.
News to me.
Yeah. There's a movie. It's called, like... Let me Google this. Hold on a second.
When did they make this?
Oh, it was not too long ago. Nebraska movie.
Why did it have color?
It had Bruce Dern, had Will Forte, June Squibb, Bob Odenkirk. Yeah, made in 2013. No color in it. It was a black and white movie.
Huh. Okay. Yeah,
no color in it.
With Will Forte, though, like, I kind of want to watch it.
It was really good. It was a great movie.
Okay.
It was. But it was in black and white, which means Nebraska doesn't have color there. How crazy is that?
How crazy. They don't have color. The corn's just all gray and black. It's weird.
Yeah. It's the worst looking corn I've ever seen.
It gains color when it leaves the state line, which, thank goodness, but you know.
Yeah. And just to let people know, Nebraska was a successful movie because the budget was $13.5 million, but in the box office, they got $27.7 million.
There you go. That must mean Nebraska's a pretty awesome place, am I right?
No, literally, the
whole
movie
is... They didn't even film in Nebraska, did they?
Exactly. Literally, it's them leaving Nebraska to go to somewhere else to win something.
It was a real hero's journey.
Yeah. Hold on. So, like, here. You see, this is so great. Okay. So, here we go. Yeah. A cantankerous old buzzard, Woody Grant, played by Bruce Dern, can barely walk down the street of his home in Billings, Montana, without stopping for a drink. Okay, so never mind. They go to Nebraska. I thought it was the other way around. I thought it was Nebraska to Montana. It's the other way around.
This movie was good. You don't even remember.
I know. I'm stupid. Without Dan's stopping for
it, he's just making it all up.
I'm just making it up. Yeah. So yep. When Woody receives a sweepstakes notice in the mail and insists on making a 750-mile trip to Lincoln, Nebraska to collect his prize, it falls to baffled son David, Will Forte, to accompany him. During a stop in their Nebraska hometown, word gets out about Woody's fortune, first making him a hero, then later the target of predatory people. But thank you, Joel, for hopping on to the pod and doing Top Chef Rundown, Dino Wars, and then the one of
kind. Dino Wars!
Yeah, Dino Wars! Yeah, the one of a kind at Hawaii, and then we're going to head to Nebraska next. It could be you. Woo. It could be another guest of the pod. We don't know. We just know you enjoy Top Chef so much, so...
I love it. That's my favorite show that I've ever seen on television ever, which is something I definitely watch.
I heard that it is highly rated in Nebraska.
100% of Top Chef constituents live in Nebraska.
Live in Nebraska. Yeah. Fun fact. Yeah.
Fun fact for all of you.
Yeah. All you convenants. All the convenants. Running around. Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, I appreciate you hopping on, and we will see everybody next time.
Goodbye.
Ooh. It was one of a kind, you know, we're going to Nebraska.
This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited, and created by yours truly, Devin Ream, and is a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transitions, and outro music. Thank you.